This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? Oh, I don't know what day it is. I don't know what. Let me just do this because we're going to call somebody in. Let's do this right now. There we go. Right, ready? Are you well? Is everything good? I really hope so. I can hear that. Who are we getting on the line? He's not answering. So this week, we don't have a guest. Well... We don't have a guest with us, but you're the guest because we asked you to submit some questions that could be about anything, and we'll just have a little chat. I just thought it'd be really nice if we communicated. I'm just laughing because it says FaceTime is now unavailable. Basically, I'm calling in producer Griff because we're going to have a little chat and answer some questions because... you know, yeah, you hear my voice most weeks talking to the guests, but you know, Griff is, you know, as much a part of this podcast as I am because we started this together. Do you know when we started this? I'm sure we can go back to it. Somebody has actually raised a question about the start of the podcast. I'm trying them again. This is all going so well. None of this is going to be edited, by the way. This is all going in, Griff, so don't even think about doing this. Oh, there he is.
How's it going, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm recording, Griff, so I'm having to record you through the phone because I can't plug in my headphones to this phone.
So what, sorry? Is my voice coming out of the phone rather than into your headphones?
Yeah, it's not coming into my headphones, no, it's coming out of the phone. Yes. I'm recording it into my Zoom.
Right. Well, that's not going to work, man. Because my voice that I'm recording here is also going to be on your recording as well, which means it'll sound terrible.
Oh, no.
So what you need to do is plug your headphones into your phone, and then you can hear me. And just speaking to that, because I've got a microphone here, Anna.
That means I'll have to go wireless.
Well, I think if that's the only option you've got, have you not got the little cable adapter thing?
No, I don't have it.
No. Well, go wireless, man, because that's a much better.
Okay, I'm going to carry on recording. This is all. I'm not going to say podcast gold because it's not, but it's the real life trauma of connecting nowadays. But it's nice to see you.
Yeah, you too, dude. Looking healthy.
It's not my haircut.
Yeah, nice, man. Who did you go to?
Let me find those. Oh, here they are. Right. Okay. Let me come out of this. And.
Yeah, because you just want your voice into that. You don't want my voice into that. And I can hear myself back on my headphones, which I don't want to do.
Right. We're perfect now. I've got you solo through my ears.
Sick.
Now, I'm playing podcast. Roulette, because I've got my phone on, so anybody could call
right
at any time.
Okay,
and I've said this when I was trying to FaceTime you. So if people do call, then I think they're just going to have to come on the podcast, and we'll see.
This is an exciting concept. Am I going to be able to converse with them as well?
I don't know. I might have. We'll have to see. We'll have to see if we can do that.
Not thought this through, Craig.
Well, there's too many things to think through nowadays. It's just, I was just reading through some questions and I thought I'm going to have to make a phone call with somebody very soon. I thought we could have a little guest on.
Sound.
So, as I was saying when I was calling you and I was just saying to everybody listening. Of course, there isn't a guest this week, but the guest really is the listeners. It's like the listeners episode, because we've been a bit barren of you know, producing and putting out the episodes, as we have been every Thursday for, you know, 3 years now. It's just been really difficult, and I just wanted to explain to everybody listening why. And there's a few reasons why. One, I've been very fortunate enough to be back filming, so that's been difficult, you know, trying to get guests on whilst I've been lucky enough to be working. And then there's also been another thing. I know that this year has been difficult for us all around the world, and there's been certain people who have been lined up to come on, and I've said, oh, are you ready? Do you fancy coming on now? And they've been very honest, and they've said, you know what, Craig, I'm not in the best place to come on and talk. And because people know the, I hate to say concept, because it's not really a concept, it's a, you know, it's an interview, but it's a conversation, and it does go into some sort of darker places. I think people felt a bit fragile and open, too open to come on. Do you know what I mean? And that's to be understood and respected. And then when I'd booked somebody last week, I was transported back to the joys of, of homeschooling for a week, which was trying, to say the least. But now we're back, and I thought we'd just, you know, we'd touch base with everybody by doing this. So should we start off with a question, Griff? So there's one question about a film that I did a few years ago called Ghosted with Martin Comston. Do we know who that's from? Have we got that there?
No, you said you were going to. I couldn't find it.
Don't worry, I'll find that. So I thought what I'd do was go straight to the source, and I would make a phone call. So I'm going to do that right now and see if you can stay on the line. What do you think?
Cool. I don't think I will be able to, though, will I? I think I will disappear if you FaceTime someone else.
Well, if you do...
Unless you do it on your laptop.
If you do, I'll call you back.
You're supposed to be back, yeah.
All right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
All right, let's go. Let's see if he answers. Oh, it's ringing. It's like those Saturday morning kids programs when they would call people and they would hope that they would pick up.
Hello?
Martin Comston.
Greg Parkinson, how you doing?
I'm good, my man. How are you?
Not bad. You know, we're just kind of a...
There's a few reasons why I'm ringing. Two, obviously, I miss you and I just wanted to check in and see how you all are.
Yeah, good, man. So we just came to the end of filming there, and I was in one of those COVID bubbles for 3 months. We're lucky to be at work, for sure, but, you know, it was a long time away for the family and stuff, so it's great just being back together. We had another, my second quarantine of this year, just with the travel, obviously going across the wife and that coming this side this time, which in some ways was good, just in terms of I got them all to myself.
Yeah, of course.
It's been interesting, you know, with a young family trying to keep them entertained. But great, mate, you know, looking forward to a quiet Christmas. How are you keeping
Well, we're doing all right, we're doing good. I was just explaining to
the listeners that I was transported back to homeschooling all last week with a 9.5-year-old, which was, it tested my patience. I've got full, found new respect for teachers once again.
What film did you
watch? We did the history of Laurel and Hardy. We just went through Charlie Chaplin. It's a big film education.
Well, what more do you need? What more does a 9-year-old need?
This is true. No, he was there with the computer, man. I mean, it was full on. But this week for the podcast, we've asked all the listening community to send in some questions, and it could be kind of about anything. And one of them that came up was about a film that we worked on together called Ghosted.
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
I still have nightmares about that.
And people were asking about the memories from it, and I was kind of thinking, was that our first film that we worked together on?
No.
There was a second, wasn't it?
I specifically, it wasn't, because, as I'm sure who asked the questions, we've got a pretty graphic scene together in it.
That's right.
And I remember that because I was so happy, because I think I was first on it. Like, why I auditioned, because it was sort of one of the leads pretty early. And I remember I was terrified that scene then when I knew it was you. I wouldn't say I was excited.
not like that.
Because of the content of that scene,
yeah,
it was important to be with somebody I trusted.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of us, we've got to go to some pretty dark places, and you've got to feel safe to go there, because you don't want to be worrying about other things, you know. I knew we could trust each other and just sort of go with it, but it was a mad scene, you know. Craig Viverios, you know, and James Friend, who we worked with, two young lads now, not anymore, but directors in a DOP who are doing brilliant stuff now. But I mean, fair play to them, they just wanted to get a film made. They went out, found this sort of little studio, and that was the great thing. Was, if you remember, because we were filming, basically it was on this prison wing, we filmed a lot of it in sequence, which as an actor is an absolute blessing.
Well, I think we filmed it pretty much all in sequence, didn't we?
I wasn't far off it. And the stories just reveal it. You know exactly where you are when you come in the morning. You know just what's happened. You know what you're about to do. So from that perspective, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, all us together was great, you know, and Neil Maskell and John and all that. It was definitely an experience, and if I remember right, it was a pretty good rap party as well.
It was a good rap party, but it was a little like sort of going to boot camp every day, because we were basically in prison. There was no the set was all there. It was the old for people listening in the UK, there used to be a sometimes twice weekly police drama called The Bill, which was on ITV, and it was the old set of the Bill. So it was all those cells that they sort of transformed.
Yeah, I'm not really into police dramas, to be honest.
Nah, I mean, I think they're a bit old hat now, aren't they? They're losing it.
But we and me and you as well, we were staying at Art Malik's house. That's what was mad.
That's how low budget it was.
Yeah, but that, again, some ways, always going to work in the morning together, going home together, eating together, having a few scoops at night together. It was a mad experience, but I mean, what have we done now together, big man? It's got to be 5 or 6 jobs together.
Yeah, I know.
And I think we went up to Edinburgh as well. I think it did well at Edinburgh Festival. Actually, I won.
No, I picked up an award for you.
I won an award for it at the Turin Film Festival. And it was in one of them bizarre hangies. Remember that absolutely stunning actress who was in Hot Shots?
Yes! Oh, my God, what was her name?
But she was also in... She's a fucking brilliant actor. She was in Rain Man.
Yes.
Yeah, one of those bizarre things. You turned up because you don't speak the lingo. Then all of a sudden, she's standing up there and you just hear your name. Oh, what the fuck? She's just standing there with your arm right here. I'm like, what the fuck, man? But I had some really good times out of it.
No, it was fun, but it was intense. It was an intense shoot. Because of the low budget nature, we had very much shorter time to film, so we had to get it done, and everybody did the homework. But it was full on. It was full on, and I think there was injuries along the way.
Aye, I took a hefty in that final scene because so brilliant John Lynch gives me a bit of a heavy beating at the end of it. And I'd say it's a spoiler, but I mean, it's about 10 years old now. But the way, what we'd done was, we thought we had a really clever camera trick where John, so we do it on one shot where John starts hitting me and I start going down. And then as I hit the floor, I got pulled under the bed, and this sort of punch bag thing got slipped out.
Yeah.
And when we did it, and then at the end of the scene, we get switched again, and I'm covered in blood, and there's blood bags attached to the punch bag, and John's punching them, and it's all flying over him, and all worked great. But when we came to do it, because it was literally a dry rehearsal on the bag with no blood bags, when we did it for real, when John's kicking the bag and the blood, he was basically just kicking that, and his feet was just slipping off the bag and kicking me in the ribs. And I think he cracked my rib.
Yeah, he did.
So it was a bit, yeah, it was definitely a bit of an experience. You'll just catch this as the pizza's coming. Those guys in the door. There you go, baby, you got the tip for the guy. See how as you say, fine dining always in the Colmston household.
Always. I was talking about you and chicken wings and mayonnaise only but this morning, my friend.
Oh, mate, don't worry. There's a side order of chicken wings.
Of course, there's always a side of chicken wings. Martin, look, send my love to everybody and to you, and I will speak to you really soon. Thanks for doing this, man.
No bother. Lots of love.
Take care, man. Bye.
Bye.
The lovely past guest, brilliant human being. Martin Comston there. That was a nice little kickstart. I want it right. Let's get back to producer Griff and see where he is.
How's it going, dude?
Griff, just lovely. We've just had a lovely little natter with Martin Comston.
How's he keeping?
He's doing good. He was just having some pizza and chicken wings delivered to his house, ever the food connoisseur.
Nice, man.
But he's good. It was good. It was nice to kick off this episode with that. This is all a bit weird. It's all a bit new. Doing it like this,
yeah,
but this is nice.
He's a bundle of joy, isn't he, Martin?
He's just great, because it's like, I think it's nearly a year since we recorded his episode.
Yeah, I remember that being festive. You got the vino out, didn't you?
We did. We shared a lovely bottle of red wine.
Good to see you're on the water tonight, keeping it professional.
It's the end of a long day. This is actually a vodka and tonic.
Is it?
Yeah,
maniac. Well, let me go and get a beer then.
All right, you go and get a beer. And we'll get down to these questions.
No, man, let's crack
on. All right, go on.
I've got plenty of water.
Let's kick off. Because now, just want to say, I mean, I'm not speaking for him, but I'm just saying it. Thanks from me and Griff for all the questions. And there was a shit ton. We're not going to be able to get through them all, but... this will go really successfully, and we'll probably do another one because it's going so smoothly at the moment. But yeah, honestly, thanks for all the questions. But on a lot of the DMs and the emails, you've been really vocal about what the podcast means to you. And we're both really touched, and it's really lovely. We're not going to read all of the all those lovely pleasantries out, because we're not the Steve Wright Show on Radio 2. Google it, kids. But we're really grateful. And I just want to sort of carpet bomb a massive thank you and lots of love to all of you for saying such kind words about the podcast and what it means to you. Yeah, it's very, very touching, and I'm not great with compliments. Griff, let's go to some questions.
Okay, we've got one from the lovely Sol Tybee, who we met in York, didn't we, when we did that
we
live
did.
Show there?
Yeah, that was our last live show, a great live show with Art Malik. Yes, we did meet Sol there, good man.
Top dude, and he has always wanted to ask, is there any aspect about the industry that when you guys were first breaking into it, you thought you wouldn't like, but now you actually love or really like?
Well, as soon as we're recording a podcast, I think we should discuss podcasting.
Oh, is that what he means? That industry? I thought he meant acting.
Well, he did. I messaged him back today and I said, oh, did you mean podcasting or acting? And he said, I meant both. And I said, well, we'll see. Right. We'll see what I can answer because we've got a fair few to get through. But I'll start with podcasting because I haven't been doing it for 20 years. I've been doing it for 3. But for me, I remember saying to you, Griff, at the time, before we'd recorded our first one with Vicky, if one person listens and they enjoy it, I'll be really happy. But for me, it was about learning how to, because I'd been listening as an actor and, you know, speaking other people's words for so many years. This is a completely different skill altogether. So I wanted to, you know, I hit 40 and went, I want to learn more. I want knowledge. I want it all. So it was just about learning how to be an interviewer and how to listen. So I was always very nervous about that. And I think, and I've said this loads on, on much earlier episodes of the podcast, that, oh, it's not an interview, it's just a conversation. And I know why I was doing that. I know. I was nervous about saying it was an interview because I didn't feel that I could legitimately consider myself an interviewer at all, because that takes a long time. If you look at the list of, you know, look at the great interviewers of the past, like, who am I to sort of call myself? I just felt like I was being slightly a fraud by doing that. But the thing is, now after...
And then you have to consider things like journalistic integrity and doing research and stuff like that.
Well, exactly, so but that's a different form of interview. And I think what we do now on this podcast, I do consider myself an interviewer. It's just it's long form conversations that aren't your journalistic, your bog standard sort of Q&A stuff. Sorry, that sounds derogatory. I'm not saying it is. It's just that that's a different form of interviewing. So that's what I was.
I mean, never been out for the scoop, have you? Do you know what I mean? Like, you've never been out for the salacious tidbits that will sell a newspaper or a magazine. No. And I guess calling it a conversation rather than an interview frames it in a kindlier manner. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think all. I think all great interviews are conversations.
Yeah.
I really, really do.
Some people need grilling, don't they? Some people need taking to task on certain things and issues bringing up, but it won't work on what we've got here.
Absolutely, but I think that there's certainly a way that you can do it in a conversation, because even... I'll tell you what, going back to the Nicole Kidman episode...
Yeah.
I had to, because I knew I had a limited amount of time, even though I got more than any other journalist at that Zoom junket, I knew where I wanted to lead the conversation, but I was very wary of, it was early in the morning for me. I know that she'd been filming. So what mood was she in? And stupidly, the night before, I read quite a recent interview with her in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And this New York Times journalist was quite shitty and quite prickly.
Right.
And he would say things, he would come back with answers, and he would say, oh, sorry, did that upset you? Was me asking that, did that upset you? And it's like, you don't have to be that sort of provocative. And she handled it brilliantly. But I thought, oh God, what if she thinks I'm sort of digging around in her past and her history and she might be a bit guarded? But, you know, obviously it turns out she was just great.
Well, you're a natural empath, Craig. You bring that side out of people. So it's one of your skills as a human, which transfers well into the podcasting world, I think.
Well, I do. You know I try my best. What about you? Griff, because it was quite early for you podcasting as well when we started this, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Sol, if he's asking about the podcast industry there, like...
No, he is.
It was a lot smaller then than it is now. I mean, we weren't early adopters by a long shot, you know. We were both podcast listeners for many years before that, but it's kind of blown up a bit now. But I think most people that are involved in it that I've ever met in person or had any interaction with are all lovely people.
Yeah.
They're all nerds. They're all absolute nerds because, like, podcasting, because it's so niche or you can really follow your particular passion, I think it encourages people that are, like, super geeky about one subject, you know, like football nerds do football podcasts and, like, you know, gaming nerds do gaming podcasts. Yeah. And I always get on with them kind of people that are, like, really into one little weird sector.
And but also, they've got such great passion. And once you open the door, you go, oh, my God, there's hundreds of thousands of people that think like that and have, and we all share that passion together.
But, yeah, I mean, like the events and stuff that get put on.
Oh, they're brilliant. They are
yeah,
fantastic.
They're ace, man. Everyone's just lovely, aren't they?
And I've never felt that there's any sort of war. And there's so many podcasts. Like, it's a very welcoming community.
Maybe 2021's the year of the podcast beef. Start mudslinging.
Oh, look, there's a list of podcasts I could do that with, mate. We should... I mean, I'm happy to start that if you want. I'm joking. We'll cut that out. Don't cut that out. It's fine. Right. I think we've answered that. Nice one, Sol. Thanks for getting in touch. Right. What's our next question, Grifter?
All right. Sound. So this is from... I don't think we have many people that we call friend of the pods, but Georgina Joel will stake a very, very strong claim to being the best friend of the pod. She's fucking amazing.
She absolutely is, yes.
And she says, Craig, what is the best thing you have ever cooked? I know you've recently adopted your Instagram as your like showcase for your own culinary skills, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm one of those, yeah.
What have you had for your tea?
I haven't had anything yet. But I don't know, I'm constantly excited about food. And anybody that knows me in real life will know that apart from talking, podcasting, acting, reading, food is a massive, massive part of my life. Instead of telling you about the best thing I've ever cooked, what about telling you the worst thing I ever cooked, which was an absolute disaster?
Go on then.
That might be better. It was a few years ago at Christmas, and I pride myself in an excellent roast dinner with all the trimmings, and the gravy is king, obviously.
I've never cooked one, man. Never done a roast. They always seem like the world's hardest. A fry up and a roast are like the hardest things in the world because there's that many elements.
It's about timing. You've got to get everything sorted very, very quickly. No, I mean, yeah. not too quickly, otherwise, hence what I'm about to tell you. But I thought one Christmas I would throw all what I've learned out the window and try something new. And I was watching a lot of food programs, and Jamie Oliver was talking about his way of Christmas. And I was gripped. And I thought, right, well, I'm going to do all these things that Jamie's talking about. He's buying all these chicken wings to make his gravy. He's smashing these spuds down to make the fluffiest, crispiest roast potatoes. He's doing this with a turkey. He's doing this brine thing. Right, okay, that's great. So it was all about the prep. And I was a good 2 days with the turkey prep. I had a bucket. I got my brine. It was all there. On the day, because I was quite nervous, I thought it'd be quite good to just have a couple of drinks of wine during the process of making it. And it all fell apart. It was an absolute disaster. Nobody could eat the food. I was a bit pissed. We basically had to redo Christmas. I ruined Christmas. I ruined Christmas.
Yeah, man, that'll do that.
And also, he ruined Christmas. So if I'm going, Jamie's coming down with me. and the red wine. So there's one tip there. If you're going to have a little drink, just have a glass when you're cooking because you need to be on point. I learnt my lesson. I've never fucked up Christmas dinner again.
Yeah, man.
It was a culinary disaster.
It's hard, man. It is hard. And I guess you need your wits about you, don't you? You can't really cook with passion with a roast. It's got to be some cooking that's done by numbers. You need a spreadsheet to cook a roast. You
absolutely do. Yeah. Yeah.
But Jamie's normally, he's normally pretty like laissez-faire with, I mean, if there's not some like manner of violence towards a potato involved, it's not a proper Jamie recipe, is it?
I don't know. Maybe we should ring Gary Usher up and ask him his thoughts on Jamie Oliver. And I'm going back to over a year ago now. If you haven't listened back to the great Gary Usher episode, you should do that after you've finished listening to this.
That was a banger.
It was.
Now, we know that finding and keeping hold of motivation is tough at the best of times, especially this year, let's be honest, right? But I'm going to tell you one thing. I have got involved this year with some personal training, and it is the best thing I have done, right? It's going to release all those endorphins that, obviously, look, it's great for your body to train. Of course it is. But it's also essential for your mental health. And that's why I got involved with the PT Factory. Now, if you want a chance to have a taster session one-to-one with a male or female trainer of your choosing who know exactly what they're talking about, go to theptfactory.co.uk. You fill in the form on the section, just put in TSPPT. You're going to get a free taster session. You can sit down, talk about your wants, your needs, your goals. They're going to talk you through because they have all the knowledge to help you achieve what it is that you want. So go to theptfactory.co.uk. What have you got to lose?
Where are we going now, Griff? Who's our next question from?
Paul McIntosh. Paul McIntosh has got two. Let's ask the first one first. Since March, it's been noticeable that quite a lot of high-profile performers have moved into podcast land as a way of staying active and staying visible when theatre/filming, etc. has been shut down. Does that make it harder to book guests or even to attract new listeners when Podcastville has become a bit more saturated?
I don't know.
Everyone's got one, man.
Everyone's like
through,
got one.
Through taking his first foray into podcast land.
Like, who did that?
Louis Theroux. But they're class, man. Like, he gets sick guests on.
No, he gets great guests. I mean, I know Adam Buxton slightly joked how miffed he was that that Louis Theroux had started a podcast. Which he spoke about through gritted teeth. But, you know, I mean, Jesus, Ramesh Ranganathan's got about five on the bounce at the moment. He's doing another one, which is very funny, with past guest Big Tom Davis. If you haven't heard it, you should definitely go and check it out. It's them just rambling and talking. And there's very much the straight man, and I think it's just a very natural conversation, and they can both hold their own, as we all know. And if you haven't listened to Big Tom Davis on the Two Shot, definitely go and listen to that. He's a great, great guy, big friend of the podcast. Has it made it harder to book guests? No, I don't think it has now, because we're quite an established podcast in the world. Of podcasting, it doesn't make it harder. What's made it harder is this year, if I'm really honest, because there's been times where I haven't felt great. I haven't wanted to record a podcast with anybody because I've been feeling slightly brittle.
Mm.
And as I said before, you know, if people aren't feeling like that, then how can I expect them to come on and open up and talk about their past with what's going on currently? it's a no-no. But as we know, things, you know, are hopefully getting better, and I'm feeling so much better than I was. Have you been all right this year? I know, because this is the first time we haven't seen each other all year, have we?
No, man. Been missing you. And it's not really seeing someone zooming, is it? I'm fucking sick of Zoom, man.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. It's just not the same, is it?
Well, it's not the same, and it's also not the same conducting a conversation, conducting these interviews or doing a podcast. I don't like it. I like, you know, which what I've always said. I read people's face. What I've learned to do is go, are you letting me in there? Can we go down this avenue, or are you opening your eyes slightly wider than normal and going, let's shut this down now, and I don't want to discuss this anymore. And it is slightly harder, and it's not very human, and it's slightly clinical. And I can't wait to get back to even doing a socially distanced walk and talk podcast with some mics, which I know me and you are discussing. And there's a few people, certainly local to me and you, within the north, that we can get together with when we are allowed.
Well, we're nearly out of the woods, mate. We'll all have our vaccinations soon and be back in pubs and that. But in answer to your question, no, I'm not. It's not been the best year, has it?
No.
I'm bored. Like, all the things that I like doing that I can't do take the toll, and it's just a bit of shit, isn't it?
Well,
God knows what it's like if your life was shit to begin with. Like, people must be crawling up the walls by now.
Yeah. Going on to Georgina, because she's a top friend, family member of the podcast, she gets to ask two questions, and she wants to ask you a question, Griff, about, do you know what the best climbing wall in Leeds is?
Well, believe it or not, that's a much more political question than it sounds like.
Oh, go on. Can you just say, for anybody listening that doesn't know, which they probably might not, a great passion for you is climbing.
Yeah, keeps me on the straight and narrow climbing. Keeps me from wasting away into middle age. But I've got mates that work for all of them, so I can't tell you which one's best. Variety is the spice of life, I'll say. City block's sick. Get down to City Block. That's a good one. I think you have to do it in masks these days, but yeah, they'll be open. I think they might be shut again now. Like, it's one of them things that's a bit up in the air. Like, you know, like when they shut all the gyms and everyone's like, well, we need the gyms so we can get an immune system that works and stuff like that. And it's all, you know, in Liverpool, they were fighting the fight, saying they needed them. Like, climbing walls is the same. So many communities and, like, friendship groups and stuff are built up around them, and people need those spaces, and they've not been open for a while. So, like, you know, we're missing out not only on the physical exercise, but, like, you know, the camaraderie and the families that get built up around there.
Yeah.
But yeah, in answer to your question, which I've massively sidetracked from there, City Block's dead good, but all the others are sick too.
So basically, Georgina, City Block, but dip your toe into all of them, Griff is basically saying.
Right, let's have one from Paul McIntosh then. His second one. Yeah, I think that's
one.
A good one, actually.
Go on.
This one is a bit more downright gossipy. His words, not mine.
Go on.
Have you ever recorded a zinger of an episode and then had the guest come back to you a day or two later saying, fucking hell, I've been thinking about that episode. I can't believe I said that. Can you cut it all out, please? And suddenly you're left with the best bits taken out.
Yes and no. Because for anybody that doesn't know, we give all our guests full editorial control over the podcasts. And pretty much 9 times out of 10, nobody wants any edits.
I'd say 99 out of 100, to be honest. It's not a very regular occurrence at all.
No, I mean, I can only... I mean, the one episode that we did record, and it was a live podcast in front of I'd say a good 90 to 100 people that we didn't put out was with Paddy Considine before a screening of Tyrannosaur, I'm going to say. Was it Tyrannosaur? No, it wasn't. It was, what was the boxing film? Oh, my God, my brain's gone. Tony Pitts was in it. Jodie Whittaker.
Oh, Funny Cow.
No. It was the boxing film. Boxing film that... Anyway, sorry.
So, did we watch it? No, we didn't.
Because we had to leg it to the British Podcast Awards. So we had to jump on the train. But we recorded that with Paddy, and it was just before he was about to go and move to New York to go on Broadway to star in The Ferryman. Yeah, we didn't put it out because Paddy didn't feel in the best place that he wanted it out there. And obviously we had to respect that. But it was an absolute zinger of an episode, I must say. And Paddy was great, and it was a really lovely conversation. But he did get in touch and ask if we could do it again sometime. And I said, well, we can, but we'll have to leave it, you know, a considerable amount of time, because otherwise we'll just be retreading over old ground, and it's kind of not what we're about. But I'm sure we'll get back there with him, because he's a, you know, not only a brilliant actor, but a absolute gentleman.
Yeah, that would be sick. I mean, the bits that get cut out, in my experience, have not been the best bits. Like, sometimes people just say a name, and it's just like, it's irrelevant who that name is. It doesn't really make any difference to the big story, but they just don't want that person to have to deal with the having their name in it or something like that. So yeah. I never felt like we've lost the filling to the sandwich, you know. But.
Absolutely not. And we have to be careful, because people do divulge some things without mentioning people's names. I'm sure there's times when people can fill in the blanks, and it's like, well, I don't really want a lawsuit, to be honest.
Yeah.
And
I'm a bit up in the air on that. Can they sue us? Like, who, or could we get sacked? Like, who would we get sacked off?
Well, I'm not sacking you. You're not sacking me.
Like, who? Because we're not signed up to anything. Like, you know, journalistic integrity. Could we get in the shit? Like, is that a possibility?
I think we possibly could. I know we have consulted our legal team over a certain episode, we were advised about a few things. I'm trying to use my words very, very carefully here. But no, I mean, sometimes people go, oh, can you just, I say and or a bit too much there. And we're a bit like, well, it's fine. It's just a natural conversation, and people use that when they're thinking about what they want to say, and that's fine. But if you want it out, it's fine. That's fine. But that very rarely happens. So no is the answer to that question. I don't think, apart from Paddy's episode, which we completely had to put on ice. No, we've been pretty lucky, I'd say. Don't you, Griff?
Yeah. And you can get precious with it, can't you? Like, I remember... I would be gutted initially if someone pulled the episode, but if you didn't exercise that editorial control, give them the editorial control, then it wouldn't be what it was anyway. Like you,
yeah, you know, no, it's one.
You've got to get over yourself and swallow it, you know.
It's the one thing I've always felt very strongly from the beginning, haven't I? Because I wanted it to be such a safe space to talk about anything and everything, that if you, because I'd seen, and this was the reason why I was doing it actually initially, because I'd seen and read and heard a few of very close friends of mine get completely misquoted and fucked over in established, respected press articles with, you know, sometimes great journalists. It's like I wanted to try and give that power back to people who come on. So that was the thinking behind it. And it, you know, yes. it's, uh, it's tried and tested, and it's, you know, it's worked for all these years, and, you know, I think we'll obviously carry on doing that. We'll never take it away from people.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we have a question from David C. Lum. Author, not famous yet, is currently writing his next crime novel.
Sorry, that's not you saying that. That's his words, right?
Yeah, this is what he's put in his email. And reading Peter James' next one. Is Peter James another novelist?
Yeah, Peter James is a crime novelist. And I think what he's referring to there is one of the jobs that I've just finished filming in Brighton is an adaptation. An adaptation of a Peter James novel, which we're producing for ITV, and it's all set in Brighton, and they're little mini films. So I think that's the connection he's talking about.
Okay, yeah, he's reading Peter James' next one, Find Them Dead. He asks, what genre of book do you like and read?
I'll let you go with this one first, Griff.
Oh, what have I got on the go at the moment? I'm reading a book on mycology, which is mushrooms. Like, you know, so I've got into foraging mushrooms and eating mushrooms that I find. So it's kind of good to know which ones won't kill you.
Yeah, we've seen your Instagram.
Yeah, man, I've been finding some beauts. I've got this lunatic mate called Tom, who's a mushroom hunter, amongst many other things, insect collecting and stuff. So he got me into it. But yeah, it's good to have a reference book that's very definitive on what things are. So yeah, that's my current bedside table one. I wouldn't say that's indicative of my general taste in literature, but that's the one that's open at the moment.
That's fascinating, though.
Yeah, man, it's good. You know, the government told us we had to forage our food from now on, didn't we?
I say that's what we're going to...
At the beginning...
Yeah, that's what...
The beginning of lockdown. Yeah,
that's what we're going to be doing from now on.
And, so that's me, self-sufficient.
And hopefully not die or trip out too much.
Well...
Too much.
Yeah.
I love a bookshop. I love a bookshop. I'm going to go over to my bookshelf. What am I currently reading? I'm really enjoying... The Offing by Ben Myers, who's a great author, wrote a fantastic book called The Gallows Pole, and he is going to be coming on the podcast early next year.
Oh, nice.
What else? I love Fleischman is in Trouble last year. Sorry, I'm just looking at my bookshelf. I've gone back to reading some plays. So I've gone back to some early Harold Pinter. And been rereading some Martin McDonagh. The Heat of the Moment by Sabrina Cohen Hatton. It's called Life and Death Decision Making from a Firefighter. It's about her journey to become a firefighter, and it is claustrophobic and tragic and brilliant and tense. And here's another scoop. She will be coming on the podcast to talk to us early next year when we
travel to that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. She's got a fascinating story. I remember I was walking around Manchester last year when I was filming, and as I always do, sometimes I don't listen to Desert Island Discs live when it goes out. I always wait for the podcast. And she was on Desert Island Discs, and I stopped and I sat down in St. Anne's Square and just listened to this woman's life, and it was up until Lem Sisse's Desert Island Discs. This was one of the most moving and touching and inspiring Desert Island Discs ever. And if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to Sabrina Cohen Hatton's Desert Island Discs, because it's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. What else? Oh, I was going back and rereading some chapters from a Cook's Tour, because I was thinking about Anthony Bourdain this year when I was rewatching some of his documentaries on Netflix. And
he would have been a good one. He would have been a good guest.
Oh, my God. He would have just been incredible. What, you see, that's what I would... let's talk about dream guests. I mean...
Yeah, man, he'd have been amazing.
But what I would want to have done with him was completely... changed it up and gone out to some restaurants and pubs and record and eat and drink and do, you know, do something what he does with him.
Oh, one of them tours with him.
Yeah, that would just be incredible, wouldn't it?
Go on, sorry, I interrupted
no,
you.
I'm just... It's funny, because at the lockdown part one, I found it really hard to even though I had the time, when I wasn't homeschooling and I was sort of by myself and I didn't have any work to do because the cameras weren't rolling, so and there's no scripts coming in. I once I'd cleaned up, you know, four times in one morning, there was nothing else to do. I had the time to sit down and you know, devour a book, but I just couldn't concentrate. I found it very, very difficult to focus. And that was the same with music or films. The only form that I could really get on board with was interviews, was podcasts, because it was like it was nice to hear conversation and people talking, and you could just shut everything off of what was going on in the real world for a minute, especially if they were recorded prior to the pandemic, because no one was talking about that, so you didn't have 15, 20 minutes of people discussing how they were, so that was nice to switch off.
And books just felt a bit like you were retreating into your own little world, which you'd already spent enough time in the first half of the day.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that. It was. I remember one time when I sat down and I reread the first three pages of a novel three times, and it was almost like I was slamming my head against a brick wall. It just wasn't letting me in, or I wasn't letting myself in to the book. And I just went, I'm just going to put that aside for the minute. But thankfully,
it'll come back.
No. Thankfully, it has come back. I mean, it was just during the first lockdown. Now, Oh, and I just got a new Clive James book when I was filming in Brighton, and I'd forgotten to bring my books. And I love Clive James, so I'm really looking forward to getting involved with that. So, yeah, there's not real, sort of any one specific genre that I'm into. I like to dip my toe into all sorts.
Yeah, man, keep it varied.
The wait is over. New episodes of The Walking Dead Season 10 are premiering early February 21st on AMC+. Don't miss the extended 10th season, featuring 6 new episodes, each focused on fan-favorite characters. Prepare for all-new high-stakes showdowns and emotional reckonings by catching up on the latest season before new episodes drop. With season binges, exclusive content, and early access to new episodes, the best Walking Dead experience is only on AMC+. Get lost in the Walking Dead universe today, available ad-free and on demand. Sign up at AMCplus.com. AMC+, only the good stuff.
Right, Ross Carswell is after some tips. He is graduating from drama school this year and was wondering if you have any advice for younger actors starting out. It was so interesting to hear you speaking with Nicole Kidman about working with younger actors. What are the pitfalls and do we find what are the pitfalls and how do we find that creative integrity while being so new? I think he's just asking for tips initially.
Yeah,
there's probably two questions in there.
I think there's four at least, but that's fine. One, I'm really sorry that you're graduating having spent however many years you have, whether it's been 2 or 3 years, you know, working your socks off, paying a lot of money, probably, you know, getting into debt. And now you're coming out into a world where our industry still isn't. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to get back, but I know there's a fair few of my peers who are brilliant, established, incredibly talented and gifted actors who aren't. So for graduates now to come out into a world where they're so hungry and they just want to, you know, feed and learn, and they can't do it because it's the work isn't there. So I really feel for you, Ross, there. I'll tell you, wait there. There's a book that I always go back to. And it's called True and False, Hearsay and Common Sense for the Actor by David Mamet. I'm just showing it Griff here. And it's a very old, slightly smelly and tobacco-stained paperback. It was when I used to smoke cigarettes. And I've bought and given this to a fair few people over the years. And it's something I go back to every now and then, and I've even dipped back into it this year because it's nice to get some perspective. I personally think that's a great book, and it's very honest. The pitfalls, my God, we don't have long enough. The pitfalls are everywhere. I would say a good thing to do is to sit back and listen. I think as a younger actor, I probably used to be slightly too gobby or opinionated. I mean, I think it's fantastic to have an opinion, and I think you should. But to sit back and listen and observe before going in is a great tip. I was doing a Q&A for Graham Park last week for a university in Wales, and we were discussing about observation and how important it is not to just sort of go in there like a bulldozer with your opinions. Having said that, I think it's really, really important to ask questions about everything. I always ask. I'm still asking questions now, like to cameraman go and say, right, what does that do? You know, because I'm completely fascinated because it's not my world, and I'm still learning now. 20 years. Do you think that answers the question? Did I go completely off road?
No, I think you're right, spot on there, man. I mean, there was the bit about how do we find that creative integrity while still being so new.
How do you find creative integrity? Well, you yourself have that integrity. It's there. It's about, you know what it is? It's about trusting your gut and your heart. I remember taking a job that shall remain nameless years ago when I was skint. I was really, I didn't have any money, and I didn't quite believe in the project, and I took it anyway. And my gut was saying that I shouldn't do it, and I did it. And it was a really unhappy time. So obviously I look back and go, yeah, I should have just trusted what my gut says, because it never lets you down. So your integrity's there. It's there. We all have it. We all know when we're doing something for the wrong reasons. Look, sometimes we have to do jobs that aren't artistically fulfilling. But it made me go, well, do you know what? If I ever got into that position again, I would sooner go and, you know, go and work as a KP in a kitchen or meet people and pull pints behind a bar, because I wouldn't be tarnishing my artistic integrity by doing an acting job that I didn't wholeheartedly believe in. I'd be doing something else to earn money. So, yeah, just trust your gut, I suppose.
Sounds like sound advice to me. Should we move on to the next question?
Absolutely.
Abby Baldwin says, not sure if this is a really generic question, No, it's not. Yeah, maybe it is actually, but it's a good one anyway. Is there a dream guest you would like to have a chat with, either alive or not?
That's a question that comes up loads whenever I get interviewed. And it changes on a daily basis, I suppose. It's a, you know, it's a little bit like when people ask you about your, you know, your top three films of all time or your top albums. I mean, it is like that, but this is kind of different because this is something that me and you have created from scratch, and I do all the booking, I get the guests, and oh God. Right. Dolly Parton, I think, would be an absolutely incredible guest.
Yeah, she looks a good laugh. I saw a video of her singing in a pub in Ireland the other day. Have you seen that video on YouTube?
No.
She's like in a proper old Irish boozer and she starts singing along with one of the musicians who knows one of her songs. It's sick, man. She's she looks very game for a laugh.
Oh, she's so just incredible. She's nice absolutely guest. Incredible. Now, I think she would be a great guest to sit down, and that would be
good answer.
That could be our record. What's our longest ever podcast we've done? I think it's Lenny James.
Is that? There's been a couple of two parts, aren't there?
Yeah, but that was we recorded Lenny as one full episode that we split into two parts.
Oh yeah,
So I think Dolly would be 2 or 3 hours plus. I reckon that'd be a good one.
Is she dead?
I'm sorry?
Is she dead?
Did you say, is Dolly Parton dead? No, she's not.
Well,
no,
I don't know.
She's not dead, Griff.
Well,
no.
Give her a call, man. Book her up.
She's in Dolly World. Dolly Black. You know she's got her own theme park.
Mad as hell. That'd be a good chapter in the story.
Chrissy Bottomley would know exactly what it's called. Christine Bottomley, past TSP guest. Is
mega fan.
She's the fan. She's the Dolly fan. There's an incredible chef who I would love on, who I'm a big fan, and I don't get starstruck that much. But I remember when I used to live in Gloucestershire and I went to my local pub one time, and it was like walking into a private members club in London. There was like members of Blur and actors, and I went, oh my God, I've just moved to the countryside and I've got this. It's fucking exactly not what I want. And I went outside, and I was smoking at the time. I went outside for a cigarette, and somebody asked me for a light, and it was a chef who I'm a huge, huge fan of called Fergus Henderson. And he is a founder of a couple of great restaurants in London called St. John. And years ago, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and he had a real tough time, and it meant that he couldn't obviously, you know, be in the kitchen. And I think I'm right in saying, I really hope I am, that he had a lobotomy. So they drilled into his head to relieve the pressure, and it helped enormously. Nice. Like his shakes ceased, and whereas now he's not, I don't believe he's back in the kitchen, but he's certainly creating, and he's, you know, his speech is so much better, and he's had an incredible life, and he's a really inspiring chef. I'd love to speak to him. Well, there's two. They're pretty good ones.
Yeah, bangers, mate. Well, I'll look forward to them being on. Give Dolly a shout.
I will. Leave Dolly with me.
And she also says, Abby, how have you kept creative during this year, or just in general? What inspires you?
I haven't. It's been for me, it's been really hard. I've had so much going on. You know, I've been spinning 9 plates, and 8 of them have been crashing to the floor on a daily basis, if I'm honest. What about
just
you?
Just going to keep that last one spinning.
The last one is just about spinning. What about you, Griff?
I don't know, man. I don't think I'm a very creative person anyway. There's more important things than creativity for me. Like, exercise being the main one.
Yeah.
Going for a run. Going doing 100 press-ups. I think that's that keeps me on the straight and narrow during the dark times. Mm-hmm. Play me piano most mornings. That's I never think of that as creative, though. That's just like, I don't know, I struggle with the word creative. Like, I always think of myself as someone, other people think I'm creative because I make podcasts for a living, but I always think I'm more like a crafts person. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, just taking raw ingredients and making them into the thing at the end. But I did some tie-dyeing, actually. I tie-dyed my entire wardrobe at the beginning of the summer when the sun was out.
You went old school.
It went terribly.
Why did it go terribly?
Well, it's back in, mate. If you're not heard, tie-dyeing's back in. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the cool kids are wearing it.
I've just finished filming in Brighton. Everybody wears tie-dye in Brighton.
They do.
And dreadlocks. That's it.
No, I've just ruined a load of expensive socks, actually. It was awful.
You were tie-dyeing socks?
Yeah, man. I've just bought some tie-dye socks, actually. I'll send you a picture.
You're going to have to send me a photo of this. This is new territory for me. What's next up?
Toby Emery says, he just wonders what jobs you did to pay the bills and get by prior to and alongside breaking into the entertainment business.
Griff, what haven't you done?
I was a cricket scorer at a very early age. I used to get paid 11 quid, that's a pound, off all of the people, off all the players, for an entire Saturday. But they did used to buy me bottles of Budweiser at the end of the match so I could get pissed when I was about 13. So that's good crack.
Yep.
Charlie Market, fruit and veg stall. Can't remember what that was called. I did that for a couple of years. That was terrible. Teaching, terrible job. Don't do that. Awful. Hate kids.
Sadly, he does mean it, but he doesn't at the same time. I know for a fact you're a very good uncle.
I'm a top uncle, terrible teacher. Altar boy. I don't think I got paid for that. I think I got a McDonald's like once a year for being an altar boy. Glass collector at St. Mary's Catholic Club in Chorley. That was a good way of spending a Saturday night. But yeah, I don't think they were really to make ends meet at the time because I was still a kid living at home. But, you know, that's the kind of jobs that I used to do.
Well, when I was at drama school, my part-time job was being a waiter or a host, I think they call them, at Pizza Hut in North London. And I got onto a bit of a scam with Pizza Hut, and I apologise for this, but needs must when you're...
That's the sponsorship deal out there.
When you're
window.
A poor student, it's fine. Look, look, it's Pizza Hut, come on. No one eats Pizza Hut, do they? Are they still going?
I love a Pizza Hut buffet,
No, you
man.
Don't.
Of course I do. Oh my. When they bring a fresh one out, you're clamour for it. See?
Well, ours was so small, they didn't have a buffet concession. But what I would do... I would mess up some sort of order, so they would make the wrong pizza. And what they did with the wrong pizzas, they would leave them on the top of the oven, just sort of to keep them warm throughout. But no one was buying them because they're the wrong order. So I would do that at least half an hour before a restaurant shut down. So then, therefore, I would take them back with me and deliver two or three pizzas to certain students who live near me, who were friends around my streets. And that lasted for a few months until the very kind manager found out that I was pulling this scam and said, you're going to have to stop this, I'm on to you. And then what I would do would get friends would come in on a Saturday to have their lunch, and then I would fix their orders and give them a bit of free food. Students, what are we supposed to do?
Criminal mastermind.
We have to kind of hustle. So that's what I would do.
Indeed.
Big up Pizza Hut. Thanks so much for all the carb love.
Veronica Meacham asks, well, first of all, she asks both of us how we are in your now iconic podcast catchphrase, "How the devil are you?" That was never planned, was it?
Never planned. I don't know what.
We just recorded the intro, and that was the one that we chose. That was the take that we chose. Yeah. And now it's like,
yeah,
no, it's the thing, isn't it?
I can never say that in real life now. You see, I can never go, "How the devil are you?" All right, I'd never do it now. But I genuinely still do ask people, you know, how they are, because I'm so curious and I want to know. And how it came about is because certain people in life skirt over it. They ask it in a completely frivolous way. They don't really ask. Yeah. They don't really ask it. They don't really want to know. They go, "Hey, you're right. How are you?" So anyway, what I was doing the other day was, if you want to ask, and I'll tell you. So that's why I do ask it, and it never has it been more sort of timely as this year. Yeah. So in answer
I kind of like that low-key northern greeting, you know, when you see one of your mates or you see someone passing on the street and you're just like, "All right," and your reply is, "All right." It's kind of, there's a bit more of a subtext in there. You are both inquiring, but it's a quiet understanding rather than having to delve deep into how you actually are.
Well, that is nice. That's sometimes nice even with strangers when you're walking past. All right.
Yeah. But I do know what you mean. I think...
You do know what I mean. For this context, that's why I sort of asked it.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, I'm doing all right. Right now, today,
I'm all right.
Today, yeah, I'm doing all right. I've had a productive day. I've had my hair cut. I've bought some Christmas presents for my little boy, and I'm very pleased to be looking at a handsome Griff and recording this. I mean, it's lovely, very nice.
I'm not feeling very handsome today, mate. I feel like I've been dug up, to be honest. But
that's because you've had a tough weekend in London. Well, apart from you feeling that you're okay, that everything's all good.
Yeah, I'm reasonable, coping.
What's her next part?
Thanks for asking.
What's the next part of the question?
Veronica says, "I don't remember for sure who it was. Clint Boone, I think. It was Clint Boone." But she goes on to say, "But sometime before the lockdown, a guest was talking about homeschooling his children. It sounded fabulously inspiring. My question is, how did that compare with the reality?"
That's not something you can really answer, is it, Griff?
No, I have no children to homeschool. I could not do it, if you asked me to.
Yeah, I'll be very honest in that I found it extremely difficult starting. Very, very. My stress levels were up to the max, I would say.
Because you were kind of keen when Clint mentioned it, weren't you? Or at least intrigued.
I was intrigued. It's not something I would be able to take on. But I know I spoke to some parents and they would go, I set the computer up and they've got all their work and I can just leave them to it. I can't do that with my son at all. I have to kind of be on him gently sort of pushing and prodding and poking and kneading and moulding and, guiding him all the time. And he's 9 and a half now. And he would, his strengths are very much sort of my strengths when I was at school, so language and English, history, he loves his sciences, maths, not so much, but he's very much like me in that respect. But it's tough going, because I remember I was on the, there was one time of homeschooling, I did 13 weeks of homeschooling, 12 or 13 weeks, something like that. I did end up smashing a plate at one point. He wasn't in the kitchen, don't worry.
In rage?
No, I actually dropped it, but it was because I was angry. I just sort of, again, it comes back to the plates crashing and all around my feet. Last week, revisiting it was easier because I thought by the end of homeschooling lockdown part one, I was getting better as a teacher in how I would try to make him understand what we were trying to do within the lessons. But yeah, my God, it's very, very tough. So yeah, in answer to your question, yeah, not great.
Don't do it.
I couldn't do it.
Get them packed off to boarding school. See you in 3 months, mate.
I wouldn't go that far, but it was tough. Thanks for your question, Veronica.
Claire M. Wilson asks, who is your hero?
Who is my hero? Do you know, I've never been asked that question. Who's your hero?
I don't know. I don't think you have them, do you? As grown-ups, it's like a bit of a childhood thing, I think, heroes. You just, when you grow up a bit, you're just like, well, they're just people, aren't they? I don't know. Who's fantastical? Like, that's what I always think of as heroes. I think I'm probably more like deeply associated them with superheroes, I think so. It'd have to be someone outside of the realms of normality for me.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know. I've never been asked the question, and I've never looked upon someone and thought, oh, you're my hero. I aspire to be everything that you are, or at least, you know, be fit enough to tie your shoelaces. I've never thought of that at all.
Is that what you think of in a hero? Like, you want someone you want to emulate yourself?
I don't know. I'm trying to
someone that I could never be. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm just trying to. I think that's what that's how I. That's how I see that question.
Yeah,
but you know, you frame it any way you want, I'm sure. But
I'm going to say Eric Cantona for mine. Then he's always been like, football's probably the thing that I liked most when I was little that I still like now. I think everything else has been a bit more of an ephemeral love affair, I'd say. But like, footballers are always, they always seem larger than life to me. And I think Eric Cantona is the one that transcended footballerdom into kind of like an enigmatic global phenomenon, you know, and he's still cool to this day. Like, so yeah, I think I'd probably say him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can answer that question. I'm really sorry. In any sort of intelligent manner. So I'm just going to leave it. Sorry about that. That's rubbish. but it's honest. So there we go.
It is. Yeah, we'll stick with that. Jules on Twitter says, I'm always in awe about how the guests open up on the podcast and how it is done without being intrusive. Has there ever been a point that you have been nervous to take the interview to a certain subject area?
I'm constantly nervous about starting a conversation because, you know, I don't know, loads of times I've never met these people before. So when we were doing these, you know, in real life, as opposed to this sort of dystopian year, you meet people, you say hello, you ask them if they what cup of tea or a cup of coffee they want, you hit record and you get down to business. And as I was referencing before with the Nicole Kidman episode, you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what kind of day they've had, or if they've been up all night, if their baby's been teething, they haven't had any sleep, they've just had some bad news, but they're still coming in. You just don't know. So you have to handle everything very, very sensitively. That's why you have to read body language. But you still have, you've still got your job to do, which is to, whether it's a job or it's just what you are, is, you know, to, I'm, you know, constantly curious and fascinated by people. So you have to carry on with that. I think the one time I really had to pull back, but to be sensitive about where she wanted to go with the conversation was with Jill Halfpenny's episode, because of what she was discussing, and it was, apart from the fact that she said it was quite clear that she'd never discussed this live, or said these stories, these facts from her life out loud before, and they were harrowing. And Joe Tresini as well, really upset me. And what am I going to do? And I felt very upset during the interview with Joe. So what am I going to do? Be completely unprofessional and burst into tears during the interview? No. But I don't know if you remember this. I remember it very clearly. And I think I was obviously quite tired as well, which obviously brings on the tears. I had to take myself off to the other side of the room with,
after Joe Tresini,
yeah, and have a little, I had to turn the taps on and just relieve a little bit of pressure with myself because I could feel the valve just had to be opened a little bit because I was going to burst.
That was heavy, that one, man.
It was very heavy. It was very heavy. But what would somebody else do in that situation if you show your emotions? It's like that's going to make them sort of clam up. It's like you have to be professional. But that's not to say once we stop recording, I can go off into a corner and have a little cry because something's upset me. I think that's natural and human. So
absolutely.
Those are the two that spring to mind. But I'm sure I'll be missing something.
I think we recorded them pretty close together as well, didn't we? So they seem to be in my mind fairly close, like in the timeline.
God, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there were some times when we were recording three or four in a day, which was fucking madness.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure.
We'll be cracking the whip and getting back on that.
Yeah, I'm never doing four a day ever again. Do you remember that time? I'm sure I definitely told you that I think we did four in one day. And I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before. It was very early on in the episodes. And I was going back on the train from London. And all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, I just burst into tears because I was still processing all these people's stories that I had sort of swirling around my head. But because I was so new to it, I didn't know how to switch off or process it. But, you know, all these things are learning curves, you know?
Yeah.
Griff, absolutely. I'm concerned about time because I think we've been going for quite a while.
Yeah, we've got two more questions. So,
okay.
Let's do these. Sarah on Twitter, who asked about eight, we're giving a two. I think two out of eight is pretty decent return.
Sarah, thank you so much for your questions. And you know what? If we do another one of these, we'll get back to your questions there. But she's a big supporter, Sarah. She's a good one.
She asks, what is the first thing you will do the moment the world is safe again?
Grifter.
Get on Lash. Pub crawl, defo.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing my friends and sitting down in a pub would be very, very nice.
Not having to second guess and like be wary about just normal things like walking around outside. It'll be lovely when we don't have to think about that ever again.
Yeah, that'll be nice. And also hugging. Love.
You're a bigger hugger than me, man. But
yeah, I know. I've got you into it.
I'm a reluctant hugger.
You are a reluctant hugger, but there's something I crave that. And my son's a big hugger as well.
Yeah, man. He showered me with hugs when he met me that time, didn't he?
It's
like, I've only met you once, man.
Come here, he says. Bring it in. A hug would be very, very nice. And, I want to cook for people. I want people to come round. And I'd plan to have some friends round this coming Friday. And I was going to cook for them. So now I'm obviously not having them round because we're not allowed. But I'm still going to cook. And I'm just going to buy some nice Tupperware. Not nice. I'm just going to buy some Aldi Tupperware boxes. And I'm going to deliver the food to the house and doorstep. Because I really miss cooking for people. So, they're all on my list.
And the second question is, glass half empty or half full?
Wow. I 9 times out of 10 over the years, I would say I am a glass half full person, pretty much. This year, for very many reasons, I've been a half empty man in all sorts of ways. I'm getting back to being half full. What about you?
I think I'm a full time half empty. I'm just a terrible pessimist, aren't I? Full time miserablest.
I don't see that in you. You make me laugh a lot.
I don't think it's to do with it. I think some of the funniest people are half empties. It's good to be cynical, isn't it?
Yeah. I used to be much more cynical than what I am.
I think I probably say half empty but act half full. I think that's me.
Thank you, Sarah, for those questions. Sorry we couldn't get round to all of them. And
one of them got mad deep, didn't it? I think it was question number 6 that she asked was like super like.
Oh God, it was incorrect. Yeah, it was very. But see, it's questions like that. That would take a good chunk of a half an hour to answer because we could really get into it. So maybe if people like this, people might not like it, Griff. They might think we're just sort of rambling off and going off road loads. but for me, I've really enjoyed this. It's been great. We'll get to those questions next time because that was a very intelligent question that she asked, and she deserves a full. An intelligent answer.
He does. So we'll finish off with Jessica Pell. She says, can you please tell us which actor Martin Compston was talking about who he saw talking to himself in the bathroom mirror? Or at least tell us it wasn't Christopher Eccleston.
I'll tell you. It wasn't Christopher Eccleston.
It was the implication that the actor who was talking to himself was a bit of a wanker, like a bit of a self-involved. I can't quite remember the.
No,
line.
I can, and I'm not even going there. And I think we need to end this podcast knowing there's some sort of, we have to have some sort of mysteries during these episodes, and that will remain a mystery.
He'll have left it out for a reason, won't he?
Well, exactly.
Can't go dropping names.
Like no, exactly.
Wankers.
No, only if they really deserve it. but that's probably a whole other podcast. Thanks so much for all the questions. Sorry we couldn't get through all of them. I hope you've enjoyed it. We're going to get back to recording. I've got 2 brilliant episodes to record this week and another one next week, and we're going to try and get a load in the bank so over Christmas and New Year, not that you need to escape from your families because you're not going to see them, but if you want to just sort of retreat to your bedroom or the spare room or go off on a walk, we will be accompanying you with hopefully some funny and fascinating conversations. That's the plan, Griff?
Yeah, looking forward to it. So you're recording some more this week then?
Yeah, I've got one booked with a comedy legend on Wednesday and another one booked with a brilliant actor on Friday and one booked the following week with a megastar from Game of Thrones.
Exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll keep us ticking over, won't it?
I reckon so, mate, yeah.
Can't wait to get to Doom in the Flesh again, though, man.
Mate, like, it's been far too long. We're gonna end this now the way we normally end it, but we're gonna do it together. So, look, until next week, thank you so much for listening and supporting. This has been the Two Shot Podcast. I've been Craig Parkinson.
This is too much like a routine, man. I can't do this.
He's been producer like Griff.
This is acting. I didn't sign up for this. I've been producer Griff.
Oh, God. We'll edit that. We'll sort that out. Nice one. We'll see you soon.
But you normally say something else, don't you?
Do I?
I'm Craig Parkinson.
He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, there we go. We'll sort it.
Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.
Acast recommends more podcasts, more episodes, more great shows. Keep listening to hear a show we recommend.
This is Sarah.
And this is Beth.
And we are Pantsuit Politics,
a podcast about the news, politics, and our democracy.
We come together every week to process the news and try to separate our emotional reactions to the headlines from the values that inform our lives.
Paying attention to the news matters, whether you ever run for office or not. Being engaged in our communities and world matters to all of us. So on each episode of Pantsuit Politics, we're asking, how can we be better citizens?
And we think it begins with understanding our own perspectives and the perspectives of others with clarity and respect. It begins with what we call grace-filled political conversations. And we hope you'll join us.
Acast recommends.